getting a ton of hype and expectation and love and respect or whatever word you want to use, how they handle that. That's a different paradigm to operate from than, hey, nobody believes in us. Let's go shock the world. You know, no, everyone believes in you. Everyone thinks you're going to do this. So now you have to go fulfill it. There haven't been many seasons at Ole Miss where 9-3 would be a disappointment. Like last year, if I'd offered 100 Ole Miss fans 9-3, at least 90 would have taken it happily. Now, if I offer 100 Ole Miss fans 9-3, I might not be able to get one to take it. Mm-hmm. They want to go at least 10-2, make the tournament, compete for the championship. Right. And they have a roster to do it. You're right. Look, they're all in. They're all in on with their pay-for-play collective. I don't like the word NIL. Silly. So name, image, likeness. No. You're just paying dudes to come play.
Right.
Which is fine. It's the way it is. But you've got that going on?
Hey, first time in studio, Neil McCready, Rebel Grow. You've been, and not just, you know, so you're obviously deep into covering Ole Miss, but you've covered a lot of different teams. You covered Auburn, right?
Yeah, I covered Auburn for 6 years. You know, my background's a little different than a lot of the guys that are running team sites or whatever you call them.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of traditional media background. Like, you're going to have Paul in here later today. I worked with Paul at two different papers, the Birmingham Post-Herald, the Mobile Register.
Mm-hmm.
I covered Auburn for 6 years. Basically covered Alabama for sort of half a season when the transition writers things. I've covered the SEC as a whole for, I guess, 4 or 5 years. I covered the New Orleans Saints some. And then, you know, in 2008, I went to Rivals, covered Ole Miss. My parents live in Oxford. At the time, you could see the writing was on the wall for newspapers if you were honest with things.
Right.
I always get some people tell me I'm negative or I'm cynical or whatever. But in this case, if that's true, the negativity and the cynicism saved me because a lot of the people who criticized me when I left, like, what are you doing? You're selling out. You're ruining your career. And believe me, Michael, I thought for a good year I had ruined my career. But a lot of those same people, they got laid off a few years later. And I had control over my own gig. And then I had done a lot of radio. I had 6 years of daily radio. Taylor Zarzer, bless him, got me to come in and be a co-host with him on a radio station in Mobile. And then when he left after a couple of years, I probably foolishly stayed. I probably should have just gone with Taylor. Who knows where I'd be today. But I stayed and kept doing the radio show for 4 more years. And so I had this daily radio show from 3 to 5, 3 to 6 every afternoon. And it probably really enhanced my journalistic abilities, not just communication, but having to line up interviews and talk to people and talk to different kinds of people. And so when I got to Oxford covering Ole Miss for Rivals, I never missed the newspaper a day. I missed the radio station pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we started podcasting before everyone had a podcast. And so we've been podcasting for 11 years. That's probably, people are always like, are you surprised you're still in Oxford? And the answer to that is yes, absolutely. I never thought I'd cover Ole Miss. I just finished my 16th basketball season on the beat.
Wow.
Last night, but I never thought I would cover Ole Miss that long, but also probably didn't know that I had, and you can relate to this because you, look at you, kind of some entrepreneurial spirit where you figure out, maybe it's just survival spirit, you figure out how to make it. And you know, we've built a podcast network that goes, I mean, it's mostly about Ole Miss, but it's not all about Ole Miss. I do basically a political show, a business show. We do, you know, just different kinds of stuff. And when you can be your own boss, you have freedom and autonomy. And so, yeah, my background's much more diverse than most of the young guys that are going into team sites now that are covering Iowa because they went to Iowa and they love Iowa and they cheer for Iowa,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not criticizing that. But I think my background's helped me.
That's how, like, most people start now. I mean, that's a good place to start, but I'm always with an eye towards where, kind of like you just said, newspapers are going, you could see that coming. I think you'll always, always have to have an eye on not where things are today,
yeah.
but where they'll be in a couple years. And that's why That's why I did start doing video podcasts. That's why I got people coming in here, because I see where things are going, and there's just less and less people listening to ESPN, SEC Network, and things of that nature.
And young people watch more than they read.
Right.
I mean, I've got three kids, 22, 21 yesterday. Happy birthday, Caroline. And a 17-year-old son. They don't read a lot. They read stuff, but they don't. They get most of their entertainment, their news from the internet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Instagram Reels, TikTok. not sure what that says about us, but, you know, that's where they get stuff. Podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're turning on the TV. In fact, I know they're not. They're not turning on the TV during this political coverage to watch Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. They're not watching the nightly news at 5:30. No. Are you kidding? I mean, they get their stuff, their information from the internet. So, yeah, it's where things are going, and you either...
And even those traditional shows, what they do now is, I mean, even during it, they'll cut it up, put it on YouTube, put it on this, put it on that, because they got to get it in the hands of people that are going to view it.
Of course. It's why I laugh at the people who criticize Clay Travis, for example. Clay's a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, he did in 2020 what he just said in 2020, what I thought every single day, and turned it into, I mean, he was successful before that, but
right.
I mean, you look at what he's done with Outkick and, you know, he's now hosting Limbaugh's old show with Sexton. And I mean, that's remarkable. I mean, that's, the guy's making an absolute fortune. Good for him.
Right.
People in our field criticize him, and I'm like, what are you criticizing? I love that criticism. Well, you're a sellout. A sellout to what? He's feeding his family.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are getting laid off left and right.
And now he's employing a bunch of people.
Yeah, and I mean, he's building an empire.
Yeah.
Frankly, a media empire at a time where it's hard to build a media empire.
Mm-hmm.
So it's credit to him.
So I wanted to hit on your time at Auburn real quick. Who was the coach there? Would it have been Tuberville?
So my first day on the job, Terry Bowden pulled me aside in the stairwell of the football building and just asked, where'd you go to school? And I'm like, oh, this is off to a great start. You know, I was at the Birmingham Post-Herald. I was on the news side. I had the early morning shift. I got there at like 5 a.m. and we put out the early paper, and then I'd look for more stuff, and we put out the afternoon paper, and then I'd go home like at, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I had started doing I worked full time on the news side, and I would, just to make some extra money and to keep my toe in the sports water, I would go cover some high school games, you know, Friday night, Saturday, stuff like that. And the Auburn beat writer left like days before fall camp started or preseason camp. And I applied for it, you know, and I don't think they wanted to hire me, but beggars can't be choosers. You know, it's like, what are you going to do? Camp starts now.
Right.
And so this is 1998. So my first day, it's Terry Bowden, and he says, where'd you go to school? And I said, Ole Miss. And he didn't like that. And then he said, well, let me just tell you, I don't need a bunch of opinion in your stories, like your columnist, referring to Feinbaum. And I said, I don't even know Paul. I've never met him. I'm just trying to swim here, you know, and felt like I was drowning. But so I covered Terry Bowden for about 6 games, and then he quit in the middle of October. And so I covered Bill Oliver, and then I covered 5 seasons of Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah, and that was probably a good time to be covering Auburn, right? Because I'm trying to think of the timeline, but I know they dominated Alabama for a good while.
Yeah, it was probably one of the reasons that I got fired from my radio show in Mobile. I tell people this all the time. It wasn't anything I did. It was what Auburn did and what Alabama didn't do. I did 6 years of daily radio in Alabama. And in that time, Auburn went 6-0 in the Iron Bowl. I mean, I would wake up on Iron Bowl Saturday going, dear sweet God, please let Alabama win so that we can talk good about Alabama on Monday. Thank you. And those prayers were never answered. Auburn dominated it, and Tuberville would start holding up the fingers and all that stuff. And so, yeah, it was an interesting time. Auburn was pretty dominant. They had that undefeated team that won the Sugar Bowl, beat Virginia Tech, probably should have had the opportunity to play for the national title, didn't get it. Tuberville had it rolling, and now he's a U.S. senator, so things change.
So you would have been there, I guess. Were you still covering Auburn when Saban came to Bama?
No, I had gotten off the beat. I was covering the league as a whole.
Okay.
When Saban got to Alabama. And that first team of his was not very good.
Right.
They didn't really buy in. You knew they were going to win. but they didn't win that first year, and the boosters in Mobile area were pretty riled up, and that was it for your boy.
Well, I was just you said 16 years, so you would have been covering Coach O and stuff, right?
No, my first day on the Ole Miss beat was Houston Nutt's first spring practice.
Okay, so right after Coach O, because I just started rereading Meat Market. A lot of good stuff with that. But
yeah, I dealt with Orgeron a little bit as a SEC writer, but
right.
You know, not on a daily basis the way that I did with Nutt starting in 08.
Mm-hmm. And that would have been after he was at Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I just love how incestuous the SEC is.
It is. That's the good word for it.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Houston didn't like me right off the top for a couple of reasons. One, we'd had some fun with his dalliance with the Little Rock TV reporter, if I recall correctly, you know, on radio and Mobile. And then, you know, he very clearly had been poisoned by some other people that were on the Ole Miss beat. You know, he disliked me from day one, which is good. I mean, the truth is, when you're on a beat, if everybody loves you, you're not doing a very good job.
Mm-hmm.
But when you walk into a new beat and a lot of people that you need to be able to cultivate relationships with, when it's very clear that they detest you, you learn how to hunt. You learn how to get, you know, you're not the family Labrador retriever that never has a stressful day in his life. No, you're having to go hunt for your food. So you get a little tougher. You sharpen your skills a little bit. It probably was good for me. There were some times that I thought, this is insane. I mean, you know, I'm working for Rebel Grove. I'm running rebelgrove.com. And this guy hates. I'll tell you a funny Houston Nutt story. I just pissed people off today. It's okay. It's 8-something in the morning. My brother Tim at the time worked for a computer consulting company called LSI Consulting,
mm-hmm.
And so he one day sent me some caps. I'm a bald guy. Bald guys wear caps, and. It was a black cap with purple letters, okay? So we're doing the media scrum after a practice, and Houston normally won't even look at me. And this time he's looking kind of above me. I can tell he's looking at me, but not eye level. He's just above my eyes. And I realize, oh, he's trying to read my cap because he thought it was an LSU cap. It was great. I was like, it's LSI. It's an I.
Yeah, you can't.
Oh. Paranoid, man.
Mm.
Woo.
Well, and then, again, I don't want to put you on the spot at all, but I've been told very reliably, I can speak, you would know better than I. That Lane Kiffin basically was doing anything he could to get that Alabama job when Nick Saban. I mean, he was politicking behind the scenes big time.
Oh, I'm sure he was. I doubt if he was the only one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, the Kiffin thing is pretty interesting. He very clearly has fun with that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, I think, when you cover Lane, you don't ever get to know him on any personal level, but I think I've kind of figured him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's genuine when he says Nick Saban saved his career. I mean, obviously things were not always incredible in Tuscaloosa between Lane and Saban.
Right.
But he learned a lot. I think Lane's a smart guy. He got there. He'd worked for Pete Carroll before, and then he'd been his own boss, of course. And I think it's safe to say that Pete Carroll and Nick Saban have different managerial styles. And I think it's very safe to say that Lane Kiffin's natural managerial style is much different than that of Nick Saban's. But when you work for Alabama, you work for Nick, or you did. And I think he learned a lot from that. Even though I don't know that he always agreed with it, I think he learned a lot from it. He has a reverence for Saban. He wanted to beat Saban so bad that it affected the way that he coached games.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's admitted that. But it wasn't because of hate or anything. It was out of respect, reverence. When Jimbo Fisher went after Nick Saban, I think Lane Kiffin almost got defensive like a son would of his father.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. So, yeah, did he want the Alabama job? I'm sure he did, Michael. Now, was he ever a candidate for the Alabama job? He was not. That's not where Greg Byrne was going.
Right.
But, yeah, look, I buy that. I buy that. I mean, how many coaches in the country truly would have turned down Alabama? Dan Lanning, maybe. I don't know whether Dan Lanning really had that job or not. I don't know. It's arguable that Mike Norvell did, or that Mike Norvell certainly used it as leverage to get everything he wanted out of Florida State. And then Kalen DeBoer took it because, of course, you take it.
Right.
You don't stay at Washington when you can be the head coach at Alabama. It's funny to me, I'm jumping around. We'll go back to the Kiffin, I promise. One of the things that is the narrative that's beginning to drive me nuts is this: Nick Saban was so frustrated with the current landscape because he could no longer compete the way that he used to. Michael, they lost in overtime in the national semifinal. Had they won in overtime, and when games go to overtime, flip a freaking coin.
Right.
Had they won in overtime, they would have won the national title. They were going to beat Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick Saban was a play away from winning a national championship in this environment with a completely different kind of quarterback, a depleted roster. I mean, let's stop with the Saban. Did he like the new system? No, he's not alone. Lane Kiffin doesn't like the new system. He's just very good at, it's what Kiffin's really good at, frankly. Okay, here's the landscape. Now take a minute, look at it, and go, that is a pile of whatever. Okay, now work with it.
Yeah, you can curse on here just about.
Yeah, it's a pile of shit. It's everywhere. It's everywhere, and this is a disaster. But this is my landscape. This is where I have to build my house, so I'm going to build it. That's what Kiffin's good at.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys look at it and go, this is insane, man. This is not the way it used to be. I don't like this. This is crazy. This is stupid. This is not the way it was designed to be. And they're all, hey, they're right, by the way. They are 100% right. But then they can't go, but, and so they, instead they go, I need to get back to where I was so we can do this the way that I'm used to. And well, that doesn't work.
Right.
So that's what Kiffin does really well. And it's what, frankly, Nick Saban did really well his whole career. Nick Saban adapted. I don't think the style of football that Alabama was playing near the end of Nick Saban's tenure is the style of football that gets Nick Saban all hot and bothered and fired up.
Right.
But it's how you won, right? I mean, it's why he hired Kiffin. He hired Kiffin because he knew he needed to renovate his offense.
Well, I'll tell you why Nick Saban retired. Because I know this too. I don't know many things, but I do know a couple things. It's because he beat Georgia and he beat Kirby.
Yeah.
And as soon as that was done, he decided to retire. Because he wanted to prevent that. Because Georgia has surpassed Alabama.
Yeah.
But they, I don't want to say luck, because they beat him. They beat him fair. But I think Georgia got tight as hell in that. Particularly Carson Beck. He got tight in that SEC championship. He prevented Kirby from doing what he never could do, win three in a row.
Yeah.
And I don't think Kirby, as good as he is and as good as they recruit, I don't think they'll ever be in a position to win three in a row again. Because it's just so hard. Now, I'm not betting against him winning three more titles. I just, not in a row.
Well, yeah, especially sense. Now that we're going to a playoff format, right, where you're going to have to win multiple playoff games. You know, the week of the Ole Miss-Alabama game, I guess that was back in late September this year.
Mm-hmm. With all the Kiffin trolling.
Yeah, Kiffin was trolling and did the Taylor Swift stuff, which was great for me because I used that as content for the whole week. Because I'll admit that I like Taylor's music, so yeah, I was familiar with some of the songs and made it easy to pull some lyrics out and have some fun. But that week, Glenn Gilbo wrote a story with OutKick, And Glenn, who's a friend, covered Saban when he was at LSU. And then I think, you know, there's mutual respect there over the years. And Glenn quoted a couple of anonymous sources, longtime friends of Saban's, as saying, hey, the end is pretty near. Mm-hmm. It might be next year. It might be this year, but it's coming. And our field didn't pick up on that. I did. I just, because I know Glenn, I know he's pretty sourced, and those were the type of sources that he would have cultivated back in the LSU days and beyond. So, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that Saban was looking for a landing spot. He's 72 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Just built the house down in Florida. I'm sure he wants to spend time with his family, with his grandchildren, all of those things. Perfectly normal. Go enjoy your life. You only get it to live once,
right?
To our knowledge, right? So, but yeah, I think it was easier to do it coming off of an SEC championship and making the playoff and losing, but not losing to an SEC team. Not losing to Kirby again.
Right.
I'm not sure had Alabama lost that SEC championship game, I still wonder whether Saban would have sometime in early January said, hey, am I ready to do this again? Because they've never really had breaks, and now there are no breaks. You have to recruit with the unlimited transfers. You have to recruit your players year-round.
Right.
Like, I think it has to change the way you go through a spring, for example. You can't go grind all spring and yell at guys and try to motivate negatively in spring. They'll get in the portal.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen this yet, but Sam Pittman has said their plan is to basically name a starting quarterback at the end of spring, and that's, like, newsworthy now. That used to be common, but that could be a disaster because everybody else in the quarterback room is going to hit that portal.
Yeah. I mean, you have to handle that really diplomatically. You'll have to really communicate with guys, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm a coach, I don't know that I'm doing that. I'm like, oh, we're going to carry this into August, man. It's really close, you know. But now on that side, the one thing I will say about that is that the kids know. The kids always know. You know, I mean, because teammates know.
Right.
Like, I've watched Hugh Freeze do a quarterback competition where Chad Kelly was in there with two other guys, and the other guys knew Chad was significantly better than them, so we were just playing games. It was semantics, you know. I mean, Houston Nutt, no, not Hugh. Hugh did it with Bo Wallace, you know, and it's like, no, Bo's going to be the quarterback. Everybody can see he's going to be the quarterback. Why are we doing this? It's just, you know, whatever. But no, I mean, for Sam, that's in a year where he has to win. Now, I think for him, you have to look at it and go, if he doesn't win this year at Arkansas, he's getting fired. So he needs to name a quarterback so that quarterback can take charge over the offseason and build camaraderie and culture. And he's got a Petrino system and all that. It makes sense. But, yeah, there's a real risk for him that you lose your depth.
Right.
The moment that those guys don't get it, they're like, okay, well, can I go play at UT Martin? Or, mm-hmm. you know, can I go play at App State or wherever? I mean, yeah, they – and you can go hop in the portal and hop back out.
Yeah. Well, I'll swing it back the lane, though, because this was the whole point I brought that up for him desiring the Alabama job.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody looks at Ole Miss this offseason, and they notice the portal additions
mm-hmm.
and the players they have returning from last year, which is more important than anything, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But so it's almost like all the chips are on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But is that – I think you could also make the case – to an extent, that's true for Lane Kiffin, too, because he is, if there is that job, like in Alabama or what have you, that he was desperately wanting, that, to your point, and I believe you, and I've heard the same thing, that he wasn't even a candidate.
Right.
I know this is crazy to say, but I don't think it's that crazy, to be honest with you. If Ole Miss wins a national championship, I mean, he's one of the top two or three coaches in the country. I don't know how you would argue against that.
Oh, you wouldn't be able to argue against it. But here's the thing about Kiffin and Ole Miss. And I started writing about Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss in, I started getting my years confused, I think 2017. Ole Miss had gone through, they'd fired Hugh Freeze for the his dalliances. That's twice we've used the word dalliances in this podcast. How about that? his escapades. And so they promoted Matt Luke, made him the interim coach. Matt's a phenomenal guy, okay? Matt.
And Ole Miss through and through, right?
Yeah, and deserved a better fate, probably.
Yeah.
But it was time to make a cut from the Freeze era. And the day that Ole Miss promoted Matt Luke from interim coach to head coach was a Sunday. Every Sunday I do a piece on rebelgrove.com called 10 Weekend Thoughts. And I led with, you should just hire Lane Kiffin, who at the time had just coached, I think, season number one at FAU. I said, just hire Kiffin. What do you have to lose? This is the time to do it. And then 2 years later, when they fired Matt Luke, I wrote again. I didn't write it. I went on a podcast, our podcast, I think it was a Monday or Tuesday of that week, because I'd heard that Kiffin wanted the Ole Miss job and that Ole Miss really wasn't taking his call.
Right.
And I thought, this is stupid.
He was, Arkansas wanted him, right?
Yeah. You know, I think, well, there were elements at Arkansas that wanted him. I think, including the AD, I think. I just don't think they quite got to the finish line. And then Ole Miss opened up. And I think he viewed the Ole Miss roster as better than the Arkansas roster. And because to your point, I don't think he ever thought he was going to be at Ole Miss or Arkansas very long at all, right? He was going to go someplace, trampoline to a big job. And, you know, all I said was, this is the time to hire Lane Kiffin. You're at the bottom. You just went 5-7 or whatever you did. You're irrelevant. You're irrelevant. You just played Texas A&M on a Saturday night in your home stadium on the last night, last home game of the season. And
no juice with that program.
Yeah, there was, that's a good pun. No juice at all. There was just nothing. You weren't relevant. You're where Arkansas is today. Just irrelevant. So who are you going to go hire? You're going to go hire Vanilla Ice Cream? I remember writing, hire Kiffin. And if it blows up, because at the time he had this reputation of, you know, he has this reputation because of his social media of this crazy party boy.
Right.
You know, I was like, if it, you know, winds up in a pile of cocaine and sorority girls, you just fire him. You're already at the bottom. You literally had just fired your coach because Elijah Moore pretended to pee on the in the end zone. I mean, there was, you've hit bottom. So once you've hit the bottom, like it's like being on a ladder. If you're at the top of a ladder, you have to be really careful. Right? You're at the top of a ladder. If you take a wrong step and you fall, you're going to get hurt. But if you're standing on the bottom step, or if you haven't even climbed onto the first rung, you can be pretty carefree. I mean, you can pull out a fifth and just whatever. I mean, if you fall, you fall, right? You're like a little baby. They're going to fall and land on their butt and cry for a minute, and then they're okay because they didn't get hurt. They only fell 4 inches, and they're wearing a big padded diaper. It's okay. You're going to be all right. They just got a little scared. And I was like, why not just do it? Just hire Kiffin. And I kind of thought, because Lane can be kind of pretentious. Ole Miss fans won't like this, but Ole Miss can be really pretentious. It's a perfect fit.
Right.
And so, and it was. It's been a perfect fit. So here's always my pushback to the Lane's going to get on the first bus out. I do a Venn diagram, okay? Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. They've made his Labrador Retriever the mascot. He is the whole program. They give him basically everything he wants. And what they don't give him, they try to give him. The program is all about him. He is the face of the program. I'm not sure Alabama would do that. Even at Alabama, Nick Saban wasn't the face of the program. It was still Alabama. Kalen DeBoer will not be the face of the Alabama program. It will be tradition and NFL and all that stuff. And I'm not criticizing. It's just the way it is. Ole Miss is paying Lane $9 million. Probably more than that now. They redid the deal. I think the money stayed the same. So $9.5 million. How many schools out there are going to pay $10 million plus and make him the face of the program and do some of the silly stuff like Juice and the social media. And again, I mean, Juice Kiffin, the Labrador Retriever, might as well be the mascot.
I mean, despite biting people, I heard he's bitten quite a few people.
Juice has bitten people?
Like people on staff.
Really? Are you sure you're not confusing Juice with Biden's dog?
That one too.
See, I think because I've owned four Labradors in my life. I've never known them to bite anybody.
I don't know. That's what I've been told.
Really?
Yeah.
I've not heard that. That's news. I think you're getting your stories mixed up, but you could be. I don't know. I can't. I'm not here to advocate for Juice Kiffin. I've met Juice. He seems to be a nice dog.
Okay.
He's not bitten me, but I can't.
Maybe this was in his because they got him real young, right?
Oh, he got him as a pup. Yeah.
Those dogs. I mean, they're great dogs. I agree, but they'll get on you.
Well, we'll chew on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was more of a chewing on people.
Probably. My experience with Labrador Retrievers is there's not a lot of biting involved.
Okay.
But, I mean, I've owned four. Unless you taste like peanut butter, I don't know that they're going to bite you. I don't know, man. I mean.
But I remember you making those same points when the Auburn job, when all that came about.
Yeah,
Auburn's not going to make Kiffin the face of the program.
No, and then here's the other part that with Ole Miss now and Lane is that I think it has started to become home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't at first. He didn't have any ties to Ole Miss, and he gets to Ole Miss, and he gets there in December of 19, throws together a staff, throws together a first recruiting class, and then right about the time that they're about to launch recruiting, boom, all the COVID silliness kicks in. And Lane basically went back to Florida and hung out at his house, because what was he going to do in Oxford? He didn't know anybody.
Right.
You know, you couldn't get within 6 feet of anybody because everybody was dying of COVID. Nobody was dying. We're doing the mass silliness. We were doing all the stuff. Nobody knew if we're going to have a season or not.
Right.
Had it not been for Greg Sankey, probably there wouldn't have been a season.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole 2020, and then once we had a season, it was the 25% attendance and all the weird stuff, and you still couldn't recruit. Lane wasn't thinking, hey, this is going to be a place I'm going to be for a long time. He didn't know anybody. He's just like a mercenary at that point.
I remember he said something like, I don't even know most of the players
yeah.
that well.
How could you?
Right.
Everybody's were testing all the time. And,
right.
And even in 2021, it was more of the same. And then, you know, I think he started to develop some roots there. People leave him alone. It's one of the things about Oxford that's pretty interesting. I've noticed it before. I've been in the Kroger with Eli Manning back when Eli was the Super Bowl champion quarterback of the Giants. And people just leave you alone there for the most part. And so I think Kiffin's allowed to sort of be himself. And who he is this really quiet, private, aloof guy. And they let him. They don't force him to do a bunch of booster stuff that he doesn't want to do. His daughter's going to school there now. His family's there. I think his sister's there. You know, he's developed some family ties, and that's why the Auburn thing last year. And look, I think he seriously considered Auburn. I know some people are out there that go through the whole, that was never real, that was a media made-up thing. That's total bullshit. It was real. In fact, if the weekend before that all went down, Ole Miss played in Fayetteville. And I went to that game. And that post-game, after that game, was a game where Ole Miss got just destroyed in the first half, came back and made it more respectable. I don't remember the final.
Wasn't it after a Bama loss or something like it? It was one where
they had lost to Alabama.
Yeah.
When that was in a close game in the fourth quarter where they had a chance to win it late. And they didn't answer the bell in Fayetteville. And it was senior night there. And Arkansas, to its credit, answered the bell. And you could tell. You know, one fighter was ready and one fighter wasn't. And the result happened. But after that game, I would have, walking out of that stadium back to my back to Martin Luther King Avenue where my car was parked in that big parking lot. If you've been to Arkansas, you know you walk forever up the hill to get to the stadium. And I'm walking back down that hill, and I would have bet any amount of money he's gone. I think I think he was for the most part. I think he was really serious about that job. I think there was an old school paradigm that was involved. Auburn wanted him. I think historically there's no debate that Auburn's a better job than Ole Miss. But we're living in a new era that the old ways that we judge things no longer apply. Mm-hmm. And there were family ties. And then look, if you ever take the Auburn job, you're never getting the Alabama job. The day you take the Auburn job, you're out on the Alabama job. And there were just a lot of things that piled up, and he just didn't, it was not going to fit at Auburn. They were always going to want him to do the War Eagle stuff. War Eagle, War Eagle, War Eagle. Every time you pass somebody, War Eagle, War Eagle. It's not Merry Christmas, it's War Eagle. He wasn't going to do all that stuff. And Auburn is big into, hey, the coach is a cult figure. Kiss the babies. Take all the... That's not Lane. Don't say he won't do a little of that when he kind of has to, but he's not going to do that stuff comfortably.
Right.
And he didn't make sense. I mean, I remember saying Auburn should hire Hugh Freeze. Hugh will do all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and Lane's not going to do that stuff. So the point is that his fit with Ole Miss is really good. Not to say that he won't leave, because I don't know. But I think it's going to take an Alabama kind of job for him to go. And there just aren't that many of those jobs. Like, yeah, would he leave tomorrow for Georgia? Sure. For Alabama, of course. But so would 99-point-something% of coaches. Would he leave for Texas? Almost certainly, right? But so we're three jobs mm-hmm. in the whole country? He's not going to go take a Big Ten job. It's too cold. Where's he going to go? So, yeah, are there jobs he'd leave Ole Miss for? Of course. But it's not like there's this wild rush to get out. And he's got it going on. I mean, they are – one of the things I'm most interested in this season is this is a program, and again, this will be my 17th season, which is terrifying. Ole Miss has never been picked to win championships.
I mean, I think it's at a point – stunned may be too strong a word, but I would be – very surprised if they don't make the 12-team playoff.
Well, here's the – I'm not sure whether they will or won't, right? I need to see them play and mm-hmm. other people play. I don't know. But that's the expectation. If they don't make the playoff, it's a disappointment.
I mean, I think they could legitimately win a national championship. I wouldn't pick them to be the leader. But if things break right, I don't think that's –
yeah, well, I mean, if you put them in the playoff, you're saying they have a chance to win the championship, right? I mean, if you make the tournament, mm-hmm. you have a chance to win the tournament. So yeah, sure. There was ESPN did a way too early preseason thing, right? Where, they got all their writers to predict who would make the playoffs. It's click, copy, right. What we all do. It's fine. Whatever. Every one of them put Ole Miss in there. It's one of the things I'm interested in. Ole Miss is always kind of fueled on the, nobody respects us. We're under the radar. Not this year, man. You can't do that. We're not getting any respect card. No, you're getting loads of respect. The only SEC team that is consistently getting more respect than you is Georgia. Mm-hmm. And you can't really argue with that because you just played them in Athens and you saw that. They're getting a ton of hype and expectation and love and respect or whatever word you want to use, how they handle that. That's a different paradigm to operate from than, hey, nobody believes in us. Let's go shock the world. You know, no, everyone believes in you. Everyone thinks you're going to do this. So now you have to go fulfill it. There haven't been many seasons at Ole Miss where 9-3 would be a disappointment. Like last year, if I'd offered 100 Ole Miss fans 9-3, at least 90 would have taken it happily. Now if I offer 100 Ole Miss fans 9-3, I might not be able to get one to take it. Mm-hmm. They want to go at least 10-2, make the tournament, compete for the championship. Right. And they have a roster to do it. And you're right. Look, they're all in. They're all in on with their pay for play collective. I don't like the word NIL. It's silly. It's so name, image, likeness. No, you're just paying dudes to come play.
Right.
Which is fine. It's the way it is. But you've got that going on. He's got a lot of guys back. He's got a third year quarterback. The only real loss off last year's team is Quinshon Judkins. They're better at receiver. They should be better at offensive line. They added some depth at tight end. I mentioned Jackson Dart. They're going to be significantly better from a personnel standpoint on defense. It's mm-hmm. Pete Golding's second year, so guys won't be swimming.
Right.
You know, early in the season last year, guys were swimming, learning a new scheme, new terminology. You know, hey, what does this guy expect from us? What can we expect from him? they kind of know that now. They're veteran guys, Jared Ivey, J.J. Pegues, you know, just to name a few, are back. There's leadership on that side of the ball. They went out and got Poo-Paul from Arkansas, yep, who was probably Arkansas's best defensive player a year ago, and now he comes in and stabilizes a linebacker core that was okay without him. Should be really good with him. They should be. The schedule's pretty friendly.
Mm-hmm.
No Alabama, no Texas. They get Georgia at home. They get Oklahoma at home. Hardest road trip is LSU. Schedule's pretty favorable. Non-league schedule's not threatening at all. They should make the playoff. If they don't make the playoff, it's a disappointment. It's a failure. This is a pass-fail season. If you make the playoff, it's a success. If you don't make this playoff, it's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't many schools you can say that of.
No.
And that's where, and this is Lane's fifth year. He's been there a minute. I mean, we in our field, I think, have a tendency to always lean on the past. And I get it. History repeats itself, all this stuff. I just think it's a new era. I'm not saying that Ole Miss is going to be a power forever in the new era. I'm not saying that at all. But they're a power today.
And who do you credit most for Ole Miss going in this direction? Is it Kiffin?
Lane.
Is it?
Yeah. He saw the transfer portal and worked it.
Yeah.
Went after it. People ridiculed him a little bit, like said it was lazy.
He's also kind of questioned, I don't know, that's not maybe not the right word, but he's called out a little bit the fans. And I think,
yeah, a little bit.
Maybe some of the speculation about the other jobs, that helps,
well,
I think,
no
even
question.
In NIL, too.
There's no question that their NIL collective took off during that time when people were either one of two things. Okay, we don't want him to leave. Let's beg him to stay. Let's give him whatever he wants. Or, mm-hmm, look, if he leaves, we're going to have this in place.
Right.
Right? And so since then, they've been way ahead on it. You know, I've talked to some other writers this week in Nashville covering other teams, and, you know, of course, sometimes the topic will shift to collectives and stuff, and there are still multiple schools in the SEC that just have old fan bases who don't like this. Mm-hmm. They don't think it's going to last, and they're not giving it their money, and I don't fault those people. I wouldn't give it my money as an individual. No way. You want me to pay for your players? But at Ole Miss, they've done it. Now, right, will they do it long term? Will they do it if it doesn't work? Let's say they go 8-4 this year. Are you going to raise another $10 million? I don't know. You know what happens when the prices keep going up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's, who knows where college athletics is going? This might just be a blip on the radar, but Lane has absolutely maximized this blip. And Lane will tell you, it's one of the things I really respect about him. We're at the Peach Bowl. Ole Miss is getting ready to play Penn State. And he's in the midst of putting together this elite transfer portal class. And he's telling you, this is broken. This is wrong. This is not good. And then he maximizes it. I think he thinks the multi-transfer thing is just reckless.
Mm-hmm.
It's you and I talked about this before we got started. I think from a fan standpoint, it is dangerous. But My opinion seems to be the minority opinion on this, and Lane's opinion's the minority opinion on it. But to his credit, again, he looks at the landscape, goes, whoa, that is nasty. But that's where I have to build my house, so let's build it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's good about. That's why he has been successful.
Well, I think it's we both agree it's because of a lack of leader. I mean, gutless leaders, and I think people don't want to get sued. People don't, you know, this, that, and the other.
Well, you know, so 2020 rolls around, and you got COVID, then the George Floyd thing happens, and so you have all the equality marches and stuff, and at the same time in college athletics, it's, we need to pay the players. Well, who was going to stand up in that environment and say, okay, but we better put some guardrails in place.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we need to have this transfer portal. You can transfer once without penalty. Okay, that sounds good. We're all about the players' rights, mm-hmm, right now, and so you go from one system, which was archaic, to this new system, in basically overnight with no guardrails. Well, of course it's going to be chaotic. If you take the speed limit off the roads and you're like, hey, and you can drive in any lane you want, man. You don't like the westbound lane? Just drive over in the eastbound lane. You can still go west in the eastbound lane. There's going to be wrecks.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a reason there are rules. There's order. And college athletics has kind of allowed itself to go down a path where it's lawless.
Mm-hmm.
And there's carnage. And I'm in the minority on this, okay? So I don't really have an affiliation with an alma mater. I'm probably wired that way. I didn't leave college going, God, I'm going to miss this place. I left college lying to the administration saying, I have a job interview on that Saturday. I can't be at graduation, which was not true. I was ready to go home.
Right.
I didn't want to be there anymore. There was never a day that I was like, oh, I missed college. So that was just the way I'm wired. And I can't imagine. And I live in a house with, you know, my oldest daughter went to Arkansas. She loves Arkansas, but she doesn't care about their athletic program. She's not about to give to an NIL collective. Are you? No way. My middle daughter's a junior there. She's not going. She loves Arkansas. I mean, she loves her sorority. She loves the school. She loves the Walton College, all that stuff. But she's never going to give a nickel to athletics. And my son, I mean, if he's going to give money to something, it's going to be to Chelsea, you know, the soccer team. I don't know whether this is going to work with young people. Because I think with young people, for the most part, college has become more transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, so what you're saying to fans now is, all right, tickets are going to be more expensive because they have to be, because we've got all these operating costs. We still need you to pay for your seat licenses and stuff because, hey, we've got to maintain these archaic stadiums that we built 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we need you to pay our players. And if you don't pay them, and we don't win, we're going to blame you for not paying them. And the coach is going to make a gazillion dollars. And he's going to have all the analysts he could want. Y'all good with that?
And massive buyouts.
And they go, yeah, and they go, well, this is pro sports. No, it's not. It's not pro sports at all. If I'm a 14-year-old boy in Oklahoma and I like basketball and I cheer for the Thunder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be there unless they trade him for at least 6, 7, 8, 9 years. Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren. If I'm a 14-year-old boy, I can invest in those guys. I can get the jersey for Christmas and feel pretty safe that jersey's going to be relevant for years. I'm a 14-year-old boy, and I cheer for OU. The shooting guard that's there, there's an 80% chance he's one and gone. He might transfer to play for Texas next year.
Mm-hmm.
He might play for Oklahoma State next year. I mean, you go to an Ole Miss practice and you're like, okay, that wide receiver played at Auburn last year and that defensive back played at Mississippi State. I mean, Pooh Paul played at Arkansas last year.
Yep.
Last year.
Malik Heath, Joe.
Princely, I can't pronounce his name, Princely Umanmielen, played at Florida last year. Ole Miss is going to go to Florida this year. It's not even a story anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the first year that Ole Miss played Auburn and J.J. Pegues was back at Ole Miss, and it was like, hey, what's it like playing against your old team? And we tried to make a story out of it. Now it's like, okay, well, we could do this every week. This is not even a story anymore.
Right.
Like, you don't see a whole lot of that, like, you know. But it's not like Dansby Swanson played for the Braves for, what, 6 seasons, and now he's a Cub. So when he goes back to Atlanta, it's like, hey, you know, you played 6 years here. You won a title. It was a big part of your development, this organization. It's not like that anymore. I was only there for a season. So now a guy's going to go play at 4 schools in 5 years?
Yep.
I mean, I'm not a fan, but if I were a fan, I'd think that would lessen my odds of engagement. So unless my team wins. So if my team wins and my laundry's winning, I'm good. But what happens when you don't?
Yeah, and I've already started to see it.
Well, I mean, I went up to Caroline, my daughter. She's a Kyo at Arkansas. And so they had Kyo Dad's Weekend. And I went, because how many weekends am I going to get to go do that, right? And Arkansas played Mississippi State. Yeah, I sat through it 7-3. Hell of a game. Hell of a game. But the point was that stadium was like half full.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful day in Fayetteville. It was gorgeous, man. You know, it was late fall in northwest Arkansas in the mountains. Colors had changed. Sun was out. It was kind of crisp in the morning and warm by the time the game ended. Beautiful day. Not a cloud in the sky. No excuse not to go. Except you didn't want to go. You couldn't blame it on the rain or, God, they're kicking off at 8:15. You know, no, it was, you had every reason in the world to go. Except you just didn't want to go. Why was the stadium half empty? Because those 40,000 people who would otherwise go to a football game decided that there was something better to do. And I can't criticize that. It's your money. It's your time. But if your team's not winning and you don't know who the players are, and Michael, everyone can't win. SEC teams are going to play each other and someone's got to lose. And so what happens at the places that don't win? Mm-hmm. And how many times can you fire the coach? Reboot this, reboot that, reboot, reboot. Until fans just go, it's not how it used to be, and I don't really like it as much anymore. And they have alternatives now. You know, there's other things you can go do. I think it's the reason that privately, if you talk to people inside college athletic departments, they're worried. Because it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And I'm not one of these people that says don't pay the players. Now, of course, the players deserve compensation. But this is not what NIL was designed to be. It was designed to be, hey, you know, if they're going to sell your jersey in the bookstore, you should get a cut of that. If your name's, if your likeness is going to be on a video game, you should get a cut of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was not, hey, let's, all right, if we pay you $800,000 a season, will you come play for us? And by making it multi-year transfers, can you imagine, let's say, my example about Oklahoma City. If you're that same kid in Oklahoma City and you go to see the Thunder and you're like, oh, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is amazing. And the next year he's playing for the Lakers because they just offered him more money.
Mm-hmm.
What are the odds that he's still invested in the Thunder? Not very high. Hey, oh, this is stupid. My team can never win. My team, it's never going to work. And that's, if I were running a college athletics program, and God knows I'm not, but if I were, that would be my concern, is that are you really going to be able to continue to build fan bases? Because young people, we talked about this earlier, they consume things differently.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do about the young people that didn't grow up going to your games? They come to your campus, they go to your school. How do you keep them coming back? And now you're going to say, oh, and by the way, in this economy with inflation and everything else, we want you to pay for our players.
Right.
We want you to pay for that linebacker that we need. And when we don't stop the run on third down, we're going to blame you because we didn't have enough run stoppers because you didn't give enough to the collective. That's endearing. That's going to work. Right? I mean, that, to me, that's flawed.
Right.
But that's, I'm discovering that my opinion on this is a minority opinion.
Mm.
It's like, well, you're just against the players getting paid. I'm not against the players getting paid. But now you're going to do revenue sharing. And only two sports make revenue. What do you do? And you, so you still have Title IX. So if you implement a system where you pay the football players and the men's basketball players a percentage of revenue, that's 98 guys, 98 scholarship players, 85, 13. Now you got to go pay 98 female athletes the same amount of revenue. What's going to happen to the other sports? They're going to kill them, man. Right. They're going to cancel them. You're going to ask people that are athletic directors and CFOs in these athletics departments who have run under one system forever, as crazy as that system is, but it pretty much worked. We're sitting here talking about it, right? You're going to go from that system to a system where you say, hey, no, run this like a business. Okay, well, then we're shutting down all these other programs. And you're taking away a lot of opportunity from young people. A lot of opportunity for young people that's their path to college. And it's going to go away. And, you know, I got my master's at ULM. If I'm ULM, Louisiana Monroe, and I've got to share revenue, we're just shutting it down. We're not doing this anymore. It's already almost impossible.
Right.
And now you're going to divide it up. You're going to have a breakaway. And I don't even get my bye games anymore. I don't get to go get demolished at Tennessee and get $3.5 million. What am I doing? They're going to shut it down. That's a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where it's going. It's a fascinating time, but I do think they need guardrails. I think they need some traffic control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just let it just go haywire and expect there not to be carnage. Because I think we're on a path right now where there's going to be carnage in athletics, and I'm at one of the places where they've really benefited from it. You know, covering Ole Miss, and so a lot of people just don't want to think about it like that. But you see it at other places, and when these stadiums are half full, and you can't pay the bills, and then you got to share the revenues and all of those different things, it's going to get pretty chaotic pretty fast.
Mm. All right, last thing for you, Neil. Really appreciate all your time. Do you have a two-parter favorite Hugh Freeze story from covering him, and do you think it'll work at Auburn? Because I'm still, I don't know. I mean, I know he did a great job for Ole Miss, but I don't know. I'm like jaded, I guess. I just don't see him as an elite coach. He seems very inconsistent to me.
Inconsistent is the word. I mean, I covered a Hugh Freeze team that went to Tuscaloosa and won, and then went to Memphis and lost.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's Hugh. Look, I like Hugh. He was always pretty much fair to me. We certainly had our moments, but that's okay. Again, that's part of being a beat writer. Will it work? Look, I don't know. I don't know what their NIL situation is. I don't know how patient their fans are going to be. They weren't a particularly talented team the last couple of years. It's difficult at Auburn to win if Georgia and Alabama are dominant. If there's a school in Florida that's dominant, and right now Florida State's pretty damn good. If Tennessee's got it going. If you can't just go into Mississippi and pluck players, and they can't right now. It makes the Auburn job tough. And is he an elite enough coach to overcome all of that and win at a national level? Their expectation at Auburn is make the playoffs.
Right.
And they're nowhere close to a playoff team. And if you look around the league and you say, who's ahead of Auburn in terms of pursuing the playoff? It's Georgia and Texas and Alabama, of course. I would argue Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee, for sure. LSU. LSU's the type of program that you would expect to make the playoff on a fairly regular basis. Maybe Oklahoma. So you start talking about where is Auburn? So Auburn's in that mix with like South Carolina and Kentucky, and that's not where they're not comfortable in there.
Right.
Their expectation is to be higher than that. I don't know that you can get there. And look, Hugh is very thin-skinned as it pertains to criticism, and it's one of the reasons why there was a time that someone linked Hugh Freeze's name with LSU back in the day, and I was like, no, that won't work. Can't do that. It won't work. That's not a fit. Hugh fit at Ole Miss. It's a pretty easy beat, not a lot of criticism. And the Alabama market is different. The Auburn market is different. There will be a lot of criticism. There's a lot of expectation. I'm not sure that he can be thick-skinned enough to handle it, and I'm not sure that fan base is going to give a non-Auburn guy the time to get that thing rolling. I don't know that anybody, Michael, in this era mm-hmm. is going to get the type of time that you need to do a rebuild.
And that's kind of what he's trying with the high school recruiting.
He's trying to do it the old-fashioned way. And mm-hmm. look, if it works, power to him. And they're recruiting pretty well at the high school level. But the problem today with recruiting high school guys is if they come in and they're 18-year-old kids away from home for the first time, and if they come in and it doesn't work immediately,
yep,
they can jump in the portal.
Kirby's calling them. Kiffin's
calling Everyone's them. Calling yeah, everyone them. Everyone's calling the old high school coach going, hey, let Johnny know.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to his mama, we have a place for him. It would work out better for him here.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those kids are going to be like, no, you know what? I committed to Auburn. I'm here. I'm going to make this work. I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to persevere. We're going to, in an era when you don't like your AAU coach, Okay, cool. Go play for a new AAU team. You don't like this 7-on-7 team? Go play for another 7-on-7 team. You don't like this high school? Move to a different high school. You don't like this high school? Go to a private school. Whatever. Kids are jumping around. That's their nature. Now you can, hey, you're at Auburn. It's not really working out. You know, I really almost went to LSU anyway. I'm going to go to LSU. It looks good on TV. Everything looks happy there. I'm going to go there. And if it doesn't work there, I can transfer somewhere else. So building through high school is going to be really difficult. Maybe he can do it. He's a very good recruiter. I think he's very good in the living room. I think parents like him. But I don't know that method, the way that he built the Ole Miss program, and he did a great job with it, obviously. That was an era from a time in the past. That era doesn't exist anymore. This is a completely different era, and you have to be able to adjust and adapt, and I'm not sure those are his strong suits.
Yeah.
I mean, he does the thing now where, you know, it's become a joke, and everyone makes fun of him, and he still does it. When it works, yeah, I had my hand in the offense this week. When it doesn't, yeah, I was working with the defense this week. And people make fun of him, and it's like you're gonna have to work through this. You can't do this anymore. You either call your plays and be the offensive coordinator, or don't.
Right.
And you know, I mean that he's got to fix a lot of stuff. And in this era, I don't know how long you get to fix it. I personally think Hugh should have stayed at Liberty. He was beloved there. There wasn't any criticism. He was the best coach in that league. He was able to get players out of the portal to come there. He'd proven that. And we're in a situation where a group of five is going to get a bid every year. As crazy as this sounds, he might have had a cleaner path to the playoff at Liberty than he does at Auburn.
Mm. And I think those players, I mean, I didn't follow it intimately, but I think they were clearly bought in because when it was, you know, all the rumors, they basically quit on him.
Yeah, the kids at Liberty don't have as many options as the type of kids that you have to get at Auburn to win.
Yeah.
Right? So you get a kid at Auburn, he's got other opportunities probably.
Mm-hmm.
You get a kid at Liberty, he might have been overlooked coming out of high school. Maybe you got a late bloomer. Maybe you got a kid that wanted to be there because of the religion or whatever. You have more of an opportunity to mold those kids, to get those kids to buy in, to get them to play for a higher purpose, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not criticizing any of that. I just say that's a fact. Yeah, because once they got wind that he was gone, they quit on him. And you saw what happened. But before that, he had it rolling. And doing that at Auburn with Kirby Smart, I mean, there are people, I know we're running out of time, there are people that are doing this, well, Georgia's done. I'm like, what? They lost one game. They haven't lost a regular season game in 3 years. And at Auburn, you've got to beat Georgia. You got to beat Alabama to survive.
Yeah.
And Auburn's not exactly making a habit of winning those games right now.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, Neil, can you tell my audience, how can they follow you and how can they find your work?
Yeah, so it's rivals.com, rebelgrove.com is the Ole Miss site. And then we do a lot of podcasting and stuff, live streams, podcast on MPW Digital. It's wherever you get your podcast. And we're also on YouTube and TikTok and all of those things. I also host a show with Tyler Siski. It's called McCready and Siski. It's powered by our friends at Rain Total Body Fuel. Check that one out on MPW Digital and follow the TikTok for that. You get Tyler Siski's Criteria Club. He's made a bunch of money for people with college basketball picks as we get into March. He's been making money for people with college basketball picks since January.
Wow.
Criteria Club. Check that out on TikTok while you still can before it's banned.
Nice. Well, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
It was fun. I appreciate you having me, Michael.
Absolutely.